50 million people around the world live with dementia right now. But too many of us think dementia is just a natural part of aging and that stopping it is beyond us. We're wrong. So I'm helping Alzheimer's Research UK to set that right. Dementia strikes at humanity's most valuable resource, the cells of the human brain. Working together, these cells define who we are, our dreams, abilities, and achievements. Alzheimer's disease destroys these precious cells and the links between them. The damage to a brain with Alzheimer's can leave it weighing 140 grams less than a healthy one. That's about the weight of an orange. But this shows that Alzheimer's is a physical disease, and through research, we know diseases can be slowed. They can be stopped. Please, just share the orange.
Powerful words from Samuel L. Jackson, speaking on behalf of Alzheimer's Research UK, helping raise awareness of what Alzheimer's is and the urgent need to find ways to treat it. The Hollywood actor has personal experience of family members with the disease and knows firsthand how devastating and cruel diagnosis can be and how symptoms destroy lives, causing heartbreak for all concerned. This week's Convex Conversation guest is Hilary Evans. Hilary is Chief Executive of Alzheimer's Research UK. It's a leading medical charity with a mission to defeat dementia by funding and delivering pioneering research to find effective treatments. But as I'm sure we're about to discover, it's not always an easy road. Hilary, thanks for making time to chat today. It really is great to have you with us.
Pleasure.
You can't get much better than Samuel L. Jackson to help bring attention to Alzheimer's. How did he get involved?
Well, Samuel L. Jackson has talked a lot about his family experience of dementia, and we picked up on this a couple of years ago and reached out to him to try and involve him in some of our awareness work. So we'd had a sort of numerous conversations with him and the team about some of the things that we'd like him to be involved in. And we've done a few Share the Orange films, which really have been about raising awareness of dementia. He saw the previous film we did with Bryan Cranston, really impressed by what we'd done with the sort of creative of that film, and so was really keen to get involved and help tell that story.
What was he like to work with?
Really, really straightforward, to be honest. I mean, someone of that sort of caliber coming in and doing a couple of minutes for a film like this was pretty easy for him. So he walked in, shot the whole thing in sort of 45 minutes and out the door again, sort of a one take, which is fantastic. But one of the things that really comes across from this film, and for those who haven't seen it, then do go to Alzheimer's Research UK's website or our Instagram or Facebook and you can watch the whole film. But actually what comes across is the real emotion and power behind the story that he's telling. He's had seven members of his immediate family who've lived with dementia. I think his mother, he's had aunts, I think both sides of his family. So it is very raw. It's very personal to him.
The clip of Samuel was recorded to highlight your Share the Orange campaign, and you mentioned that just now. Tell us what that is.
So Share the Orange really came from the team within Alzheimer's Research UK looking at how we could come up with a slightly different way of talking about the fact that dementia is caused by physical disease. So in some of the initial research that we were doing, we did some work to really understand what people knew about dementia, what people knew about the physical conditions that cause dementia. So Alzheimer's disease causes dementia, vascular dementia causes dementia. And there was a lot of confusion about that and a lot of confusion about it's just part of getting old. It's an inevitable thing that's going to happen when we get older. There's not much we can do about it. So actually, do we really need any interventions? Do we need medical research? Quite a fatalistic approach. And we really wanted to sort of turn that on its head. And so we looked at how we could do that. And one of the most physical things I guess you could talk about was the impact actually on a brain. So if you took the brain of someone who was healthy and the brain of someone who had died with dementia, actually the difference between the weight of those two brains is about the weight of an orange. So we thought, okay, let's go with this sort of analogy and see what we can do about turning the conversation about an orange rather than maybe pictures of two different brains or an Alzheimer's ridden brain, which isn't easy to look at for anyone, probably wouldn't engage our audiences. And so that's where the Share the Orange really came from. So we had Christopher Eccleston front the first Share the Orange in 2015, and then we've had had Bryan Cranston, whose mother had Alzheimer's disease, who did the second campaign. And then obviously more recently, we've had Samuel L. Jackson. And all of them have used the concept in a slightly different way of talking about the disease, talking about the impact of the disease on families, on society, explaining medically what was happening in the brain by using the orange itself, so the sort of segments of the brain slowly sort of falling away. And those segments of the brain, those segments of the orange are actually the sort of parts that make up the whole person.
So most people know someone suffering from some kind of dementia. One of my grandfathers did. But as Samuel mentioned in that clip, and you've just talked about Alzheimer's strikes the brain. I mean, can you explain in layman's terms what happens to the cells and the links between them and what actually happens when the brain eventually sort of shrinks down, you know, by the size of an orange?
Yeah, there can be some confusion about what happens to someone who has dementia. And I think one of the things that needs explaining is there are the many different diseases that can cause dementia. And one of the diseases is Alzheimer's disease, and probably the most well-known. And those terms can be used interchangeably when people talk about Alzheimer's or dementia. But there are a number of different diseases that can lead to dementia. All of those diseases will affect the brain physically in a different way. And each of those diseases will then have different outcomes in terms of how people will live with the disease and eventually die with the disease. But I think if we took something like Alzheimer's disease, really what happens is within the brain, there are buildups of toxic plaques. And ultimately, they interfere with the neurons in the brain. You lose those connections, and ultimately you lose the connections within the neurons in the brain, and parts of the brain then start to shrink. And with Alzheimer's disease, that usually starts within the hippocampus, which is a small part of the brain sort of behind the ear. That starts to shrink, and that is often where memories are stored and formed. And that's often why one of the main sort of symptoms that are sort of widely recognized with Alzheimer's disease is loss of memory or forgetting things and forgetting faces. But there are other diseases that cause dementia, so vascular dementia, so damage to the vascular system in the same way that you can have damage to your vascular system within your heart. Your vascular system within your brain can be under enormous stress, which can be exacerbated by heart disease itself or strokes or diabetes or high blood pressure. And again, the impact of that might be on a slightly different part of the brain. And so the symptoms that someone would then present with could be quite different. And there are then other diseases that maybe aren't so well known. So frontotemporal dementia, which affects the front temporal lobes of the brain, often can change people's personality quite significantly, or it can impact on their spatial awareness or their sight. So symptoms that aren't always associated maybe with dementia and therefore can be quite hard to diagnose in the earlier stages. So I think that, you know, one of the things that when we're talking about this disease, it does get very complicated. The brain is an incredibly complex organ, and it's one that medically we're probably behind other areas of human science in terms of really trying to understand what is happening in someone's brain and why it is happening and what the diseases are doing. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons that this has been a challenge medically thus far is often it's not always been seen as a disease. And so for us, it's trying to get back to those quite core messages that dementia is caused by underlying diseases. And if we can understand what is happening, we are in a much, much better place to treat them.
We'll talk shortly about the research that you're involved in, the groundbreaking research that's going on. I was shocked to hear there that 50 million people worldwide suffer with some form of dementia. And I think the other misconception is that it's an old person's disease. That isn't always the case, is it, Hilary?
No, it's not. And there are different, as I mentioned, there are different types of dementia, and there are certain types of dementia that can often affect people who are much, much younger. And there are a small number of people who do carry particular genes, which will mean that they will develop a form of dementia relatively early on in life. So we know there are a small group of people, and normally those people know who they are, that have had a very early onset dementia in their families, that will often develop dementia in their sort of mid-30s to early 40s, and often not live much beyond their mid-40s. It's a very rapid form of dementia and hugely devastating for families, because they have a sort of 50-50% chance of passing it then on to their children. But there was also people in their 50s and 60s who are living with early stages of dementia. This isn't all about people who are sort of in their 80s and 90s and maybe towards the end of their life. And so I think that we really need to turn the conversation on its head. And I think that we often see this as something that is about older people. Actually, if you look at the disease itself, this really could be classed as a disease of midlife, because one of the things that we do know, and is probably more of a recent development in this field, is that this disease is striking the brain physically maybe 15 years before you've got any symptoms. So it may be 70, you start displaying some early stage symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. Actually, the pathology has been building up in your brain for 10, 15, potentially even 20 years. But the brain is a very resilient organ and will find ways around some of the problems that have been caused by neural lapses and misfunctions within the brain caused by some of these buildups of toxic plaques. That it's actually only at the very late stages where actually everything almost collapses and suddenly those symptoms all start sort of just running through and start becoming very obvious for family and friends around that person with Alzheimer's disease.
What struck me about spending quite a bit of time yesterday looking through your Instagram site is it's the human stories. I mean, your site's absolutely brilliant. It's heartwarming in many ways. It's sad in many ways. You're telling real people's stories. I know you work with families a lot. How devastating is diagnosis, Hilary, for families?
Hugely devastating on a number of levels. I mean, it's devastating to get a diagnosis of any disease, particularly with dementia. There isn't anything that we can do. There are no treatments. There isn't a cure. There's very little we can do to even really make life much more comfortable for people with dementia. The care system and social care infrastructure isn't what it needs to be. The research into looking at those treatments and cures or preventative measures lags hugely behind other areas. And so I think people sort of looking down the barrel of a diagnosis can see that. But I think the real human cost on people, often they've had to really struggle to get that diagnosis. So this is something that maybe they've been trying to get or understand what's happening to their loved one for months or possibly years. And so sometimes that diagnosis can be in a way a bit of a comfort because they actually know what is happening to that person. But I think at the same time, there isn't anything that doctors who are diagnosing this disease can really do. And I think a lot of the clinicians that we work with find that very frustrating and devastating for them, that there's not enough that they can do for their patients. And that has remained the same for people who've been doctors diagnosing people for the last 40 years. And that's something that really, really needs to change. And I think this is why it's so important that people do come forward and tell their story. And something that we've been really keen to help facilitate is to tell those stories and to not hide this disease away. You know, we shouldn't be ashamed of dementia and what it does to people. But I think for any family who's been through it, they know how devastating it is. But if you've not seen what dementia can do to an individual, to a family, actually, people need to see that, because only by seeing that can people, I think, really understand why we need to make those strides in medical research that we're trying to do at Alzheimer's Research UK.
It's summed up very well, I think, in a clip taken from your Instagram of Uvashi talking about her husband, Bhupendra, who suffered from a lesser known form of dementia.
I met my husband when I was 19 in India. To cut a long story short, I fell in love with him pretty much straight away. There's lots of evidence, but I didn't really pick it up. First one I remember really clearly is when shopping, and I said, can you pass me a pack of crisps? And he struggled that with his what's crisps? And then his behavior got a bit more dramatic. You know, he became more paranoid and he kind of started changing. So I took him to doctors and then they diagnosed at UCL and said, okay, he's got FTD, which stands for frontotemporal dementia. Your personality goes, your judgment goes. It's almost scandalous that we've known this condition for over 100 years and yet we have no answers to that. We can't really find a cure for these masses with our research. And I think that is so critical.
As Uvashi says, research is critical. And I know as a charity that you're at the cutting edge of it. Tell us about the work that you're doing to try and pick up the disease in the brain years before the symptoms develop. You just mentioned that sometimes it can be there 15 years before we see any symptoms. That presumably gives us some hope.
It does. And I think this area of research is really key in terms of trying to pick up dementia much, much earlier than we would be able to do with current clinical tools. So at the moment, a diagnosis might look like blood tests or brain scans or tests to look at someone's judgment and cognition. But it's quite a difficult disease often to diagnose. And we're diagnosing at a point where it can be quite difficult to treat. It's a little bit like trying to treat a brain tumor when that tumor's spread across your entire body. Actually, all you can really do at that stage is maybe make someone comfortable and ensure that the symptoms aren't too severe. What we need to do is to diagnose and intervene much, much, much earlier. So before the brain is ravaged by this disease. And in order to do that, we need to have much better diagnostic tools to be able to do that. So one of the projects that we've started in the last couple of years is to look at how we can detect this disease by tapping into things like people's mobile phone data, people's wearables, their sort of smart devices that they might be then wearing, just a part of their normal life, just to pick up on changes in their way they might type on their phone or their iPad or their computer, how they talk. So really, really subtle changes. But actually, there is evidence to show that we can pick up through digital data, which would create ultimately a sort of digital fingerprint. It'll show when people's cognition starts to waver and they might start to do things a little bit differently, which is really their brain trying to find a different route and a different way of overcoming some of the challenges that might be happening within their brain due to very early stages of Alzheimer's. And if we can create that kind of digital fingerprint, we can create a device that could be just an app in a phone. It could be a particular thing that we can add into a wearable that actually will then allow us to understand when some of those changes might be taking place and what those interventions might look like. And if those interventions could take place much, much earlier, we will have a much better chance of being able to diagnose and treat this disease at that stage than we would 10 or 15 years later.
I like the analogy you use on your website about the weather forecast. You know, it's like being warned of a blizzard when tramping through the snow. I mean, weather forecasting is sort of similar kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this has been a disease that's been talked about and just seen about being older people. And I think if we can turn this on its head and really see it for what it is, which is a disease of midlife that needs to be treated a little bit like how we would treat people who potentially could go on to develop heart disease, and the intervention now would be a statin. Actually, there could be that kind of pharmacological intervention that we could be able to give people some sort of treatment much, much earlier in life that will lower their risk of this disease getting any worse or potentially developing this disease at all, which would be a huge, huge breakthrough.
And how close are we, do you think, to having something perhaps on our smartphones or watches or something that can do exactly as you've described?
Well, we are still at the earliest stages of this project, but this project is certainly underway. It's got the backing of people such as Bill Gates, which is absolutely fantastic. He is relatively new to the dementia space. His father sadly passed away with dementia earlier this year, and he's been very keen to look at digitally how we can push the dementia research field forward. And so obviously with his backing and the support of everyone behind Alzheimer's Research UK, and that's, you know, thousands of supporters, we are getting this project up and running and looking at how through clinical trials and through touch points with the NHS, we can actually try and road test these sorts of devices, which I think for us is hugely exciting. Obviously, that can't come soon enough for people living with the disease or getting a diagnosis today. But that still is a big, big step forward in terms of our understanding of the disease. So even at the earliest stages of this project, we will be able to feed back information that we get from early stage research that can help other parts of the dementia research field.
I know you're working with scientists all over the world. How has COVID impacted on the research that's been going on?
Well, like lots of organisations, COVID has had a big, big impact on what we're able to do in dementia research. So everything from funding obviously has taken quite a hit, and that's from us as an organisation, but other research funders in the UK and across the world. A lot of our scientists just haven't been able to be in their labs. So they've had to either divert the use of their labs to COVID-related science, quite rightly so, but that obviously does put dementia research back, or they've not physically been able to be in their labs. So a lot of that research is going to be delayed. We are hoping that this is a delay rather than a huge sort of step back, but ultimately any delay in this area of research will cost lives. And it's something that, you know, we are very, very aware of and are really trying to ensure that as Alzheimer's Research UK, we can continue funding new areas of science, ensuring that particularly, I think, for young researchers, so people doing PhDs or postdocs, that there are streams of funding there, because actually the funding that they would normally be going for in terms of new grants just hasn't been there. And I think that that's something that we are at Alzheimer's Research UK really committed to trying to keep on track this year. But it is very, very challenging because our funding has been hit like many, many other charities.
As a journalist, I've covered many of the stories about funding, and I know there's been a historic lack of funding for dementia research. I'd like to play you this clip from an interview that I did with a government minister. He was live on the GMTV sofa for ITV, and it was recorded about 7 years ago.
But that is why we've made dementia a national priority for the government.
But you haven't. Sorry to interrupt you there. The report says you have not made dementia a priority. Despite promises, and I quote, despite promises to do that, not much has happened since the strategy was launched a year ago, and the Department of Health doesn't know where the first £60 million of dementia funding has gone. So you haven't made it a priority, have you?
Well, it is a government.
Hilary, do you feel that funding is still not a government priority?
I don't think at the moment it is a government priority. There have been times it's been a little bit more of a priority. The rhetoric that we have heard from government in recent years hasn't then been delivered on in the way that I would have hoped. We had some really positive leadership from the government under David Cameron, who launched the first Prime Minister's Challenge and used the G7 meeting to prioritise dementia research. And behind that, there was a stream of funding that it really is making a difference. But I think there needs to be that continued funding. Dementia research is far from done. And I think that we need the UK government, but we need global governments to work together. This is a global problem and will need to be tackled on that sort of platform. This isn't going to go away. If anything, it's going to be made worse by COVID. We've seen the impact of COVID on people living with dementia, which has been absolutely devastating. And I think that, you know, we need to see the sort of funding in dementia that we've seen in other areas such as cancer. And none of these diseases should be played off against each other. But I think if you look at the human, the societal, the economic impact of dementia, it actually outstrips many, many of the other diseases that have been made priorities over time. So we certainly are calling on the government to ensure that dementia is a priority and there is funding and real progress behind some of the promises that have been made. So we have got what is being called a dementia moonshot, which was launched by Boris Johnson in the last 12 months, but we're still waiting for the detail as to what that looks like and where the money's going to come from.
And you and your colleagues have tripled the charity's income in the last 3 years, allowing more of that groundbreaking research to be done. How have you done that, Hilary?
Well, it really has been a team effort. And I think that one of the things that I'm so proud of what we've done at Alzheimer's Research UK in recent years is to talk about dementia in a different light. So we talked earlier about the Share the Orange film. We've talked about dementia, I think, in a way that a lot of other organisations maybe haven't or couldn't. And I think coming from this as a medical research charity rather than a social care charity makes a little bit of a difference here. We are talking about the need to find treatments to accelerate progress in research. And often we find when we're talking to supporters, that is what they want to see. They want to see hope. They want to see the kind of power of what we can do as medical researchers, but they also feel that this is an area that has been neglected by a lot of people, hasn't really been talked about. People who had diagnosis didn't feel they could talk about it. People didn't really understand what dementia was, didn't realize something could be done. And so I think that we've sort of galvanized people behind us by being very positive in our approach, by offering people that sense of hope as to what the future could look like. And I think we've seen this in other medical disease areas. And I think it's something that people hadn't seen in dementia before. So that's been fantastic. And that, I think that's been a large reason why people have come in behind us, because we've just been very open about what it is we're trying to do and the need for everyone to come together and work with us to do this. And I think that our approach from a funder's perspective has been to be a bit of a catalyst to work with as many other people and organizations as possible, bring different funders together, bring people who have worked in business, who have worked in politics, who are successful in many different areas, and use their power and their abilities to come behind what we're trying to do. But I think one of the strongest things is actually just to bring the public in behind what we're doing. And that's from people who are volunteering with us, who are funding research, who are getting involved in research themselves. And for me, that's probably made the biggest difference in the last 5 or 6 years.
What's been really heartwarming for me is to see that often people with dementia are your most enthusiastic fundraisers. I was watching Sue, who has vascular dementia, having her hair shaved off. I think she's also done some running for you. I don't know, that speaks volumes, doesn't it? That people who are suffering with often dreadful symptoms are getting out there and getting behind research and the need to try and find some cure.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, Sue is an incredible woman. She ran the London Marathon for us last year. She's had a tattoo of Alzheimer's Research UK on her arm, which she raised a few thousand pounds for, I think. And she's just had a head shave. So she's a fantastic ambassador for the organisation. But there are many, many people in Sue's shoes who aren't able to have a voice. And so I think it is really important when there are people who are living with this condition that they are able to speak out about it, but the organisation is able to give a voice to the many hundreds of thousands of people who don't have that voice, who often can be invisible in this, because I think that ultimately gives power to what we are trying to do. But I do think it shows a lot that people, particularly in the early stages of this disease, one of the things that they often will ask is, what can I do? And I think that there's that realization sometimes that there isn't a lot that we can do for them at this stage, but there's a huge amount that they can do for us in terms of helping support research that would mean that further along in the future, people won't necessarily be taking the same path that they will have to take at the moment.
Often in these podcasts, Hilary, we get stuck into a bit of childhood background and personal stories much early on. But this time I felt there was so much to talk about with Alzheimer's and dementia that a bit about you has sort of got pushed back towards the end. I hope you're not offended by that.
No, but
I am fascinated, Hilary. You know, I know that you got an honorary doctorate in medicine at Exeter University and that your medical knowledge is clearly a massive asset to the charity. But tell us a bit about you and your personal story and how you've ended up doing what you're doing.
Yeah, sure. So I've been at Alzheimer's Research UK for 7 years now. And before that, I worked at Age Concern, which is now Age UK. For me, there's been a real draw to working with older people and in an area that's often, I guess, neglected to some extent. I think there's a real personal drive behind dementia. So I had grandparents who had dementia. I had my grandma who had vascular dementia and my granddad who had Alzheimer's disease, and both moved to be near where I then grew up in Somerset. Both lived in a care home. So I saw a lot of them and helped care for them at various stages. And I think, you know, that leaves a big print on you. You know, I was a sort of mid-late teenager at the time. And I think you don't forget seeing someone in that position and the impact it then had on my parents. And I remember when my granddad passed away, my grandmother then thought that my dad was my granddad, so would call him George. And seeing my dad, who was so close to his own father, then having a mother who didn't know who he was but thought that he was his father, was something to sort of get your head around, but really to understand how this condition really does, I think, play and pull on people's emotions and everything that makes someone who they are. So I don't think that's something that really left me. But I think that for me personally, in terms of a sort of career, there was never a particular sort of plan or path. I think something useful and meaningful. And I started off by working in Parliament, and I did a politics degree, and then sort of as a sort of younger person, I think we sort of wanted to try and sort of change the world, and sort of went about it from, I guess, that perspective, but quite quickly was exposed to a number of the different amazing charities that we have in the UK. And that was then a big, big drive for me to actually want to work in a charity. And so the opportunities that I had at Age UK was absolutely fantastic. And I think that really taught me a huge amount about the UK voluntary sector. Age Concern and Age UK, one of the biggest charities certainly at that time in the UK, and did some fantastic work across health, social care, income, poverty campaigns. And I then saw an opportunity with Alzheimer's Research UK, which was a relatively small charity at the time, and a big leap for me in terms of the sorts of organisation I was used to. But I was very keen to do something that maybe hadn't had the limelight and hadn't had the power behind it that a big infrastructure like Age UK had had. So I joined Alzheimer's Research UK as a director. And at the time, I think we were about 38 members of staff. And so the whole organisation was smaller than my team at Age UK. And I joined with two other fantastic directors, and we were brought in by a new chair of our board, David Mayhew, who is an absolutely fantastic chair to work with. He's had a long, distinguished career in the city, but has done some fantastic work with charities. And the board, I think, gave us the opportunity to redesign the organisation, to reset the potential that this organisation had. And I think that for me, that was really, really exciting, because I could see this organisation had huge potential and probably just needed a little bit more direction and drive and purpose, but actually could just be more ambitious than it had been to date. And it had been doing well in the years before I joined, but I think just needed that clearer research strategy to deliver for people with dementia, and to reset how we funded research had been quite important. So rather than just being a responsive funder of research, so waiting for scientists to come to us with a good idea, and we would then fund that piece of research and support them over time, and we would do some awareness projects. We actually then have continued to do that and to build that important funding stream, but actually look specifically at where are the gaps in dementia research? What is it that Alzheimer's Research UK is in a unique position to do? And how do we as an organisation then make that happen? And so for me, you know, my personal drive is very much to be collaborative, to go out there and see who else we can work with, who else we can fund with, who can help us deliver on some of these projects. So I think that, you know, we've had a lot of the ideas, but we've needed a lot of other people to help us tell that story, or to fund the research, or to work in partnership with us. And for me, we're still really at the early stages of doing that. And I'm not going to give up until we really do see progress for people that are living with this disease. And we are much closer than we were 7 or 8 years ago, which is fantastic, but we are certainly not yet there yet. So for me, that sort of personal drive is not going to go away. And I am very committed to this area of research and to this organisation. And a lot of people from the voluntary sector will talk about work as being more than a job, but it certainly is for me and for a lot of the people that I work with. And I think that it is really about the team. We've got a fantastic team of people who are really passionate and committed to what it is that we are trying to do.
That's a very lovely story, and you can see your enthusiasm and passion absolutely shining through during the interview. There is still a stigma around dementia, and I know you've done some great work too, trying to break that down and shift public perception.
There is. Particularly, you know, in this sort of society that we live in, famous faces telling their stories about getting a diagnosis or living with the disease. And we've seen Barbara Windsor more recently, who, along with her husband Scott, have been talking about how they've coped with this, how they've coped as a couple. Barbara's sadly now gone into a care home, but Scott ran the London Marathon for us last year with a team from EastEnders. Those sorts of things, I think, really do help people in having someone to relate to, a story to relate to, and that starts breaking down those barriers. But I think there's also a piece that actually it's important to tell the story of medical research and progress and understanding, because I think that one of the things that breaks down barriers or stigma is when people understand what this disease is and that it's caused by a disease. And with that kind of progress and treatments, actually, that's when we often start seeing stigma breaking down. And I think that we've looked quite closely at other areas where there have been big breakthroughs in research. So take HIV and AIDS. Actually, a lot of the stigma was broken down as those treatments started coming through and people understood more about the disease. Similarly with cancer, when often people wouldn't even say cancer. It was the big C and it wasn't really talked about and it was hidden away in families or in life and in society. That isn't the case anymore. And I think people were really proud to go out there and fundraise and do something to help their loved ones with cancer. And we are seeing that same overwhelming response to people telling their stories of dementia, whether that's in a family or wide, more widely in society. And I think that's a fantastic thing to have helped change.
I think we should end on some words from Samuel L. Jackson, because as well as helping you with the campaign, he's been very open about his own personal experience with the disease. So let's send on a Samuel L. Jackson clip.
I've been surrounded by Alzheimer's, I guess, most of my life. I guess selfishly in a way, thinking, well, hopefully they'll find something that will help people with it, just in case it assails me at some point in my life. And I know that the loss of a loved one, even though they're physically present, is a terrible thing for people. I mean, I went through it with a lot of different people in my family. So hopefully we're finding a way that people can keep hold of their loved ones, their loved ones can keep hold of them, recognize them, maintain the memories of the joy they've had in their families, and us feel like we've done everything we can to make sure that their lives, you know, had quality at the end, more so than, you know, Alzheimer's just takes all those things.
They really are wonderful words, aren't they, Hilary?
They are, absolutely.
You've been a fantastic guest. I'm sure that your interview is going to be of interest to people, not just all over the UK, but all over the world. So I do hope you'll feel able to share it with people suffering with Alzheimer's and dementia and the researchers and anybody else you can. It's such an important story to get out. So thank you for being so eloquent and explaining it so well to us.
Oh, thank you. It's been great to talk to you.
That was Hilary Evans, CEO of Alzheimer's Research UK, talking about the pioneering work that's happening to try to treat Alzheimer's before it takes hold. Please do follow the charity. Their Instagram account in particular is packed full of stories to inform and inspire. It's at Alzheimer's Research UK. Thanks for your company today. Download more of our inspirational guest interviews at convex.podbean.com, or you can search The Convex Conversation on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, also on iTunes. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.